NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Cardiff Garcia.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Today on the show, the coronavirus.
The coronavirus has been dominating the news all week, not to mention rocking global markets.
Yeah, stocks had their biggest weekly loss since 2008.
And the Federal Reserve also came out today saying it would take action to support the economy if it needed to.
Not to mention companies from Apple to Nike to Microsoft, all warning that their earnings would be hit and their supply chains could be disrupted because of the virus.
And in China, the death toll from coronavirus has reached 2,700 people.
Tracy Alloway is an executive editor for Bloomberg News. She's based in Hong Kong, and we talked to her both about the economic impact of coronavirus and what it's like to live in a city that is in the throes of dealing with an outbreak. That conversation after this.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Salesforce, a customer relationship management solution committed to helping you deliver the personalized experiences that customers want. Salesforce, bringing companies and customers together. Visit salesforce.com/learn more.
Support also comes from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Tracy, thank you so much for talking with us. What is Hong Kong like right now? Like, what is happening in Hong Kong?
Sure. So it's been pretty wild, as you might have guessed. Almost immediately, you saw a run on a bunch of goods, like face masks, like toilet paper, bizarrely, like bags of rice. For a couple weeks, they were really, really hard to find across Hong Kong. People were really panicking. You would see people walking down the streets of Hong Kong, you know, sometimes like small little old ladies carrying what looked like a 2-year supply of massive toilet paper packages.
Really?
That is still, it's still a common sight on the streets. You still see people stocking up on that stuff.
Wow. So, I mean, but these are items that you need and want too, I imagine. I mean, what did you do?
So I got really lucky. I am considered wealthy in the currency of Hong Kong now. I have lots of toilet paper, lots of paper towels. I managed to get 2 extra hand sanitizers yesterday, which is like winning the lottery in Hong Kong. They magically cropped up at a nearby 7-Eleven. So I feel pretty good. But it's all been luck. And there's a sort of underground chat group among Hong Kongers about which stores are getting new shipments at what time. So if you're really committed, you can get up early in the morning and go stand outside a pharmacy that is supposed to be getting a fresh shipment of face masks and hope that you'll be one of the first in line and that you can maybe get some of those.
Has there been a moment as you've been kind of in the city, walking around the city, is there like a moment or an image that's kind of stuck with you where you're like, wow, this is quite an event that I'm living through?
Sure. So there was one day before Lunar New Year, which was when people in Hong Kong were really starting to get worried about this particular outbreak. And I went to a pharmacy to try to buy some masks. And when I was at the pharmacy, the only ones that they had left were little fluorescent neon colored masks for children and incredibly expensive boxes of N95 masks. These are widely considered, you know, the Mercedes-Benz of face masks that they were selling for $150 per box. And I was watching a group of, local Hong Kong residents and also some expat Westerners look at the available supply of masks, and people were trying to figure out, was it worth spending the money? And then, of course, the expat Westerners came in and they just bought up all the N95 masks that were there. And the locals were left to sort of figure out whether or not they would buy the kids' masks. So there's a degree of the coronavirus outbreak exposing inequality in the city.
How many people, like, is everybody wearing a face mask?
So Asia has a reasonably long cultural history of wearing face masks, so it's much more acceptable over here. And I would say, again, within a week of people really freaking out about the coronavirus, probably 90% of people are wearing masks at this point.
Oh.
It's also, it's sort of a social thing. It's almost an obligation. If everyone's wearing a face mask, then you sort of, you limit the spread, clearly, because everyone's wearing a face mask. But also, there's a cultural signal to it that says we're kind of all in this together, it's a special time, and we're all doing what we can to stop this outbreak, even if it's just wearing a face mask.
Do you wear a face mask when you go out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every time.
Do you, like, when do you take it off or keep it on?
Well, that's the really weird thing. There seems to be a weird belief system in Hong Kong that you're immune to the coronavirus as long as you're eating and drinking at a restaurant. So people will wear the face masks on the street, but then as soon as they go to a bar or a restaurant to have dinner, the face masks immediately come off and everything is normal. It's a bit weird because on the one hand, you walk down the street and it looks like a scene out of Contagion, but then you walk into a restaurant or you see people drinking outside of a bar and it looks completely normal.
Huh. I mean, does it feel like the reaction is appropriate? I mean, how does it feel? I mean, you're there, you're sort of in the atmosphere of the city.
Right. So I'm not really in a good position to say whether or not these are the appropriate measures. So, but what I will say is the coronavirus keeps spreading and the cases keep piling up. People can see it's very, very contagious, even though they're still arguing over the fatality rate. But at some point, if this goes on for months and months, at some point, governments, particularly in Asia, in China, in Hong Kong, now in South Korea, and in Japan, are going to have to make a decision about how long they can realistically shut down the entire economy, about how sustainable it is to restrict the movement of people, to stop flights, to shut down factories, limit the movement of goods in their efforts to stop the outbreak. And already in China, we're seeing some efforts by the Chinese authorities to get people back to work. And they're sort of juggling these two imperatives of making sure that the economy doesn't grind to a complete halt and also making sure that as people go back to work, it doesn't restart the spread of the virus.
So, I mean, you have such an interesting perspective because you're sort of in the middle of the reality of it. In the US, it feels quite abstract still. I mean, have you been surprised at the economic impact of the coronavirus?
So, I haven't been surprised from the sense that you think about the world's second biggest economy coming to an almost complete standstill, there are clearly going to be economic effects. The weirdest thing to me of this whole saga in the markets has been we spent 2 years religiously following every in and out of the trade tensions between the US and China and sort of wringing our hands, worrying about what is this going to do to global supply chains? What does this all mean? And then when China actually started shutting down factories, its transportation network, told people they couldn't leave their houses. For weeks, the global market didn't really react to that. That was the weirdest thing to me.
That's true. I mean, what economic indicators are you watching right now, or what are you kind of keeping your eye on at this moment?
So there are a bunch of alternative indicators for China's economic activity in particular. This is one of the plus sides of no one actually trusting the official GDP data. It means that there's a lot of other stuff that you can look at. So for instance, coal consumption is a really interesting one as factories come back online. You can see coal consumption is way down from where it should be, but it is starting to pick up ever so slightly as the Chinese government starts to encourage people to come back to work. Yesterday, I was looking at a chart of moviegoers in South Korea, which have plummeted to practically nothing. So really, it's this piling up of indicators that becomes really, really interesting.
Tracy Alloway, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Darius Rafieyan. It was fact-checked by Brittany Cronin. Our editor is Patty Hirsch, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.